Welcome to the Rise Method podcast, where we make fitness information available to everyone. I'm Steve. Let's jump in.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Rise Method podcast. In today's episode, we're going to jump into three questions that have come up over the last week. But in Rise news, it's an exciting week. Like always, we're in week 11, the final week of the 12-week challenge starting next week. And then we start to conclude the first ever BTC, the Body Transformation Challenge. And then we get ready to start the second BTC, Body Transformation Challenge, 12-week Body Transformation Challenge, starting on the 10th of June. So registrations will quietly being opened on the 20th of May. So that's just in a couple of days of the release of this podcast. And if you have previously completed a challenge with us, you will get a very special VIP return challenger offer to come and join us. So that will be in your inbox on the 20th of May. And we hope to come and see you in our next challenge starting on the 10th of June. And as an added bonus, as soon as you join, you'll gain access to all of our content. So from the 20th of May, you could join and get access to everything up until the start of September. So it's going to be really, really cool. Now, before I kind of jump into these questions, I want to tell you a very quick story that actually happened to me just a few hours ago. So it was lunchtime here, and for me, maybe like you, I'm a pretty simple eater. You know, I enjoy leftovers for lunch, maybe cooking up some eggs or having a sandwich or spaghetti bolognese, really basic, simple meals. And when I cook, I like to clean while I'm cooking, and everything has a nice flow, everything in a nice place, and blah, 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 really simple, easy to do. And the reason why is because when I'm cooking, when I'm preparing food, I don't want all the complications that come with preparing foods. So I like to try to simplify as much as I can, clean up as much as I can, so that I can keep my mind focused on more exciting tasks like training or getting work done, whatever it is, right? But for this particular day, I wanted to make sushi. So yesterday I went and bought a little sushi kit maker from Kmart. You know, this is not an advertisement for that, but I went and bought one of those. Went and bought some sushi rice, got some bits and pieces of sushi, and today I had put together some sushi. Now, I have not made sushi before. This was the first time putting together sushi. And what happened was, because it was a new experience for me, prepping the foods, putting it together, making the sushi rice, rolling the thing, and having the little bamboo platter and the little sushi prepper and all the bits and pieces, it just got really messy really quickly. You know, I needed a chopping board to chop up the avocado and some cucumber, and then I needed a second chopping board to kind of chop up my sushi roll once it was like rolled up, and then I needed a little bit of water to keep the bit of seaweed wrap together on the roll, and need space for that, and I got bits and pieces, and I got the salmon open, all the stuff, and it was just a big mess, and it ended up just being lots happening, which caused a little bit of like overload. Like, geez, there's just a lot of stuff happening. And the other problem that I had was I made too much. So I made too much. I ate what I made. And then, you know, a few moments later, after I finished cooking, I was like, oh, geez, I am now tired. I have eaten a lot of food right now. And then I need to clean up this thing. And like, my mind's all over the place. I've got chopping boards and rubbish and bits and pieces all over the place. Now, what the hell does this have to do with fitness? Okay, so when it comes to losing weight, when it comes to getting fit, when it comes to taking control of our nutrition, the best approaches are to really simplify and uniform our food. And that means that you would want to be repeating the same types of meals over and over again. So most of us probably do this already. If you sat there and wrote down all the meals that you do on repeat, you probably might do 5 or 10 different types of dinners on repeat. You know, maybe spaghetti bolognese on a Monday and taco Tuesday on a Wednesday. Then you do like a tuna casserole on a Thursday. And then on Friday nights, you have a roast or whatever the situation is. You might have the same meals that you just kind of repeat, right? And maybe from time to time, you would do something spontaneous like, oh, hey, I want to make sushi, right? And go through the process of doing something new. Now, the best weight loss approaches are when you repeat the same meals, because it is less stress, as in less decisions need to be made. You streamline the process of cooking. You could meal prep in advance, and you get really good at portioning out the food. Okay, so for me, I faced all the opposite problems with making something new. I had lots of stress while I was cooking it. Not that it's super stressful, but there's extra stresses of decisions to be made and need lots of stuff. I made a lot of mess, so a lot of like clutter in my life. I over made the portion of food, so I ate it and I didn't realize until I finished eating. I was like, oh geez, okay, this is actually a lot of food. So if I were to do it again, I would become better at making that meal. So there's nothing wrong with having sushi and there's nothing wrong with having something new. But if I was to repeat that meal and add that into my collection of meals that I have over and over again, I would become more streamlined in making it. It would be less of a hoo-ha to put it all together. And then I would portion my meals appropriately. So if you're there and you are finding it really stressful around food and nutrition, and you might be finding that you are wanting to have, you know, lots of variety in your meals, it might be better, especially when you're focusing for weight loss in a short window of time, just to repeat the same types of meals. And then if you needed more variety, make small adjustments. So for example, if you had a really simple like stir fry dish, let's say, you know, some chicken, some rice and some mixed veg, you could reinvent that meal by swapping the chicken out for some beef, right? So it's a similar type of meal. It won't add any extra stress, but you recreate the meal with slight variation so you can meal prep that meal over time. You can get better at the portions of that meal, and then you simplify the cooking process. But I thought I just wanted to share with you my beautiful sushi experience. It was really tasty, really nice. Had a little bit of wasabi, a little soy sauce, at home. A little bit cheaper than buying sushi out and about, but a lot more involved into it. Look, team, look, I've got three questions which we are going to get through. So the first question here comes from Amanda on the Rise Method app. And Amanda recently mentioned that she has been listening to this podcast. So hi, Amanda. And the cliff notes of her question is that she is looking at the programs that we have, and she's really liking the Build program. So Build program is our program designed to build muscle and develop your body in that way. And it follows straight sets and upper and lower split. And it is the only program that has commercial gym equipment involved into it. Some other programs might have, you know, like a lat pull down and things like that, where it's not uncommon for people who have garage gyms to have things like a lat pull down accessible to them. But the Build program is the only program that has things like a leg press and such involved into it. Okay. So she says that the program starts with a squat, and she prefers not to do them because of what she says is rotation in her hips. So she's implying that when she gets to a certain depth, her hips kind of turn, might be painful, might be uncomfortable in your hips, and she would normally substitute a squat for a leg press. But this particular program starts with a squat, and then the second exercise is a leg press. The reason why is a squat, it's a little bit more of this kind of open, high skill exercise, because you need to have some balance, some coordination to complete a squat, and it requires lots of different contractions through your body, versus a leg press where you just simply sit down, you're nice and stable, and you're just pushing a sled, right? So we do a squat first and then continue to challenge the legs with a leg press in a higher stability environment, okay? So she would normally make the swap, but the program already has a leg press in it. So she says, what else do you recommend to replace it with, referring to the squat? She just doesn't want to skip the set. Okay, great question. So if the problem is that it's primarily in the hips, and if you are squatting down too deep to a point where it's painful, this is not uncommon. Lots of us have image-confirmed FAI, femoral acetabular impingement, where either the head of the thigh bone is too big or the hip bone socket is too small. And a lot of us have that condition with no pain associated with that. So it's not a painful condition. It's just a structural finding that we see in MRI scans. Now, because of that, if Amanda was someone who had FAI, she might be of a higher risk of developing, you know, hip kind of impingement-like syndromes, where if she is working jobs where she's sitting down for long periods of time, or in positions where she's rotating her pelvis a lot, then she might be feeling this kind of pinching sensation where it's uncomfortable. So what we can do instead is we can either A, look for ways to correct that hip impingement, or B, finding ways to continue to do activities. So when it comes to correcting that hip impingement, we want to be looking up and down the chain. So often individuals who complain of something like this, where the squat depth is too painful, they usually have a decrease in rotation in the upper back. So if you were sitting down and you just twist your body from side to side, you might feel kind of tight and stiff. So if you work on ways to rotate through the upper body, maybe finding ways to extend through the upper body, things like, you know, a dead hang on a pull-up bar, or even focusing on a little bit of thread the needle type stuff where you're trying to rotate through the upper body, can help to ease the pressure off of the hips. The other option you could do is look at things like some body work, like massage, osteo type of work, even like a myotherapist or something, into kind of like the hip musculature. So, you know, massage into the glutes and hip flexors, or even if you're up for it, some like dry needling, that could be really helpful to release some tension around the hips. And you might find that when you squat, ooh, great, happy days. The other option is we can look at how you're completing the squat and make modifications to that squat pattern so that you can continue to squat with an adequate depth. So the first thing we can do is one, to elevate the heels. So elevating the heels, either with lifting shoes or a weight plate, can help to let the knees travel further over the toes. So instead of requiring lots of hip flexion, you then move that range of motion to other joints like the knees and the ankles. So that's option one. Option two is you can widen your stance. So if you bring your feet out wider, that will help to externally rotate your hips a little bit more. And then really focusing on pushing those knees out can help that position, gives you a bit of space for your torso to move into. And then you could start completing a squat a bit more like of a low bar position where you lower the barbell a little bit on your upper back, kind of on the back of the shoulders, and requires a bit more glute involvement. Third option we could do is to limit how far you go down in a squat. So you can complete activities like a box squat. So you could get a box or a bench or a step or something like that, place that behind you. So when you complete your squat, you just squat down until your hips touch the box and then you stand back up. So there are some options that you can try. And then the final thing we need to consider is that maybe you just haven't done squats in a really long time, maybe. And maybe it's something that you've been avoiding for a while because you've been substituting it with a leg press. So of course, the first time you reintroduce a squat, it's going to be uncomfortable. So you might want to swap that exercise for something like maybe a goblet squat variation where you have the load in front of your body and you really focus on turning the toes out so the knees come out and puffing out your chest. And that way you can start to get some reps in through the knees and the hips to develop more strength and capacity in the knees and the hips. So then the squat becomes a little bit more comfortable to do versus what it is now, where it's probably uncomfortable and you're opting to do activities like a leg press. Okay, so a few options for you there, Amanda. All right, next question comes from another Rise Method member. And this is someone who's saying that I'm going on holidays in 11 weeks. I'm currently 74 kilos. What kind of weight loss is realistic? My previous coach said that half a kilo per week is sustainable. Okay, so let's break it down. Now, what their other coach might have been saying is that half a kilo is kind of what we write down in the books as a goal to lose per week. And what that equates to is on paper, a calorie deficit of about 500 calories per day, right? Now, this is just a basic formula where we go 1 kilo of body fat is about 7,700 calories, or let's say 8,000 calories. So a half kilo of that would be, you know, just under 4,000 calories. We divide that by 7 and you get very close to about 500 calories per day. So on paper, that's how we're simply trying to calculate it. We go 500 calories per day is half a kilo a week. Now, when it comes to weight loss goals, we would calculate somebody's total daily energy expenditure. So that would be their basal metabolic rate multiplied by how physically active they are. Then we would reduce that number. Now, often it is reducing that number by 500 calories. That's a very common space because most of us are getting very close to, let's say, 2,000 calories per day as our TDEE. But then 500 calorie loss is about 1500 calories. So most of us, 1500, 1600 calories is not unheard of for weight loss endeavors. And for most of us, we get very close to that 500 calorie deficit. So most of us, comma. The problem is that saying a blanket rule that 500 calories per day in a deficit or losing half a kilo a week is sustainable might not be correct as a blanket rule because there is individual variances. So for this individual who's 74 kilos versus me who is 100 kilos versus someone else who is 60 kilos versus someone else who might be 120 kilos, we all require different calorie amounts. So for me, my maintenance is probably close or just over 3000 calories, where someone else, their maintenance might be 1800 calories. Someone else, their maintenance might be beyond that, you know, 3,500, 4,000 calories. So to say a blanket 500 calorie decrease is what is to be expected of everybody as a uniform, that might not be correct because for some folks that could represent, you know, close to 30-40% of their total energy demand, especially if they're of small body weight and low physical activity levels versus someone who is really highly active and able to consume a lot of calories, that 500 calorie deficit might just be a misnomer and we need to increase that deficit, or we can increase that deficit to a higher rate because they might be eating a lot of food as it is. So a better approach, instead of focusing on pure numbers, is to focus on percentages. So when it comes to losing weight over time, instead of saying I want to lose half a kilo per week, it's better to say something like I want to lose 0.5% or 1% of my body weight per week, because then it is more relative and individual because it can compare the same to me and to you, right? So what we recommend here is a weight loss rate of about 0.5 to 1% per week. The reason why is anything over 1% starts to suggest that we're losing more than just body fat. We might be losing some water weight, some muscle mass, especially over longer periods of time. And it might not be a good indication if it's over 1%, like, hey, something else might be happening here. If it's under 0.5%, then it might be too small to detect because there's other errors that could be involved. Maybe you just drank too much water, too little water, or maybe you have eaten a little bit more volume of food, haven't gone to the toilet, these types of things. So if you are losing less than 0.5% of your body weight per week, then we can look for ways to increase the deficit. Now, in previous podcasts, we spoke about how using like a linear equation, like, hey, this is what my calorie need is per day minus a deficit equals this. Those numbers aren't probably accurate at all, right? It's probably better to think of it as algebra, saying, hey, I think I'm eating X because I'm consistently eating the same meals each day and I'm doing similar steps each day, and then my body weight loss is Y, as in like the letter Y in algebra, then you can make those decisions and you go, well, I am losing maybe 0.5% body weight each week, then whatever I am eating, regardless of if it's what I think is 2000 calories or 1800 calories or 2000, whatever the number is, whatever I think I'm eating over time, then I just need to just keep doing what I'm doing because I'm losing half a percent. Now, if it drops below that, then you could just decrease your food intake slightly or increase your step count slightly. Or if those numbers start to change, you can make and tailor those positions, right? So when it comes to, let's say, 11 weeks, round it to maybe 10 weeks, you could expect to lose anywhere between like 5 to 10% of your body weight. So if you are, let's say, 74 kilos, 5 to 10% of your body weight could represent something like, you know, 4 to 7 or 4 to 8 kilos as a sustainable-ish weight loss. Now, that number can change over time because a 10-week period, you know, we can start to see the influence of building muscle, especially if you're returning back into exercise after some time off, or you're in a great environment to make a change, or you are, you know, just beginning your journey, you could see some muscle growth while you are losing weight. So saying something like, hey, I want to lose 4 to 8 kilos because of 0.5% or 1%, that might not be a really amazing goal because you might technically be losing that weight, but then also gaining a little bit of body weight because gaining muscle. So then you would want to relate that back to how you're feeling in the mirror, where you're going, oh, hey, you know, I'm now down to 70 kilos. I've lost 4 kilos in 10 weeks, but I also look like a different person because my I'm a bit more upright. My posture's changed a little bit. You know, I kind of feel more tension and tone in my muscles, and you know, things feel differently to me. Great. These are ticking really good boxes. Versus, oh, I'm upset because I didn't lose 8 kilos, right? Because you might have technically lost 8 kilos, but then gained a little bit of body muscle mass along the way. So there's being really careful about how much worth we put into that number, especially if we're using that as a goal-orientated and success-orientated approach. So a better goal might be something like, hey, instead of an outcome-based goal, you have like a process-based goal. So instead of saying, I want to lose, you know, 4 to 8 kilos, you might want to lose, your goal might be to simply focus on the activities that will get you that outcome. So I'm going to walk 10,000 steps a day. That's my goal. I'm going to consume what I think is 1600 calories or 1800 calories or whatever your calorie goal is. I'm going to strength train 3-4 times a week. I'm going to go to bed at 9 p.m. every night, so I get a good night's rest. I'm going to drink, you know, X amount of liters of water, whatever it is. So thinking about these action-based goals, that should be the goal that you're trying to hit rather than the actual outcome at the very end. Okay. Good question. Final question here was a DM that I got on Instagram, and a little bit of a long-winded question, but I'll just try to summarize it here. So this individual says they have work commitments and a young family, and they often need to move their training days around. So they gave some examples how they would need to look after their young kids, or maybe their wife wants to train on a night when they were going to go and train, so they, you know, let their wife go and train instead, and he looks after the kids, that type of thing. So they were following a upper and lower split, and their major issue is whether they use their major issue is that sometimes they would train 3 days in a row or sometimes 4 days in a row. They're trying to build muscle and they're worried that it's not optimal right now, and because it's something that they just want to really achieve. Okay, so the question actually ended without a straight question. It was more of a bit of a statement like thing, but let's kind of break it down. So when it comes to training splits essentially is a way that we're just going to organize the work that we're going to do. Now, when it comes to training splits, there's no real optimal approach. It really comes down to a preference and a little bit of a logistical consideration. So it doesn't matter if it's really a full body split or an upper lower split or a body part split or push pull legs, whatever the situation is, all of them can be effective because we're just organizing the way that we're training. Think of it like a timetable at school, right? There's no optimal timetable at school. Some of them might start to make sense. Like you wouldn't put, I don't know, like math and physics kind of like back to back, because then you're like, well, you're just kind of confusing students because they're like kind of two hitting each other, right? Or if you're trying to learn two languages, you wouldn't put like French and Arabic next, like back to back classes, because you're just going to confuse the individual. So there are ways that you could approach training where you're going, well, it's probably not wise to do lots of legs training on one day and then the next day you do legs again. So something like an upper and lower split could be helpful, especially if you're training 3 or 4 days in a row, because you could train legs on, let's say, a Monday. Then on the Tuesday, you're doing upper body, so the legs are kind of resting. And then on Wednesday, you're training again. So yeah, okay, you've got like this time in between. Depending on your recoverability or how much stress you're applying when you are training, you might be ready to train on that Wednesday. Or it might be in a situation where your body's not ready yet. So for me, sometimes it feels great if I, you know, train the second day after. So if I do like Monday and then I'm training the same body part on the Wednesday, sometimes it feels great on particular body parts. So let's say like my arms, like right now I'm doing a bit of an arm specialty program. I can train that, no issues. I can train my biceps every day, right? It recovers quite quickly. It's a relatively small muscle. But if I was training bigger muscles, let's say like my quads, training them to a higher intensity, then I would suffer a bit if I was to train them again. You know, I wouldn't be able to perform as well. So there are some challenges that you would face. So for this individual, the bigger rocks that we need to consider is, regardless of the training schedule, we need to think about how well we are recovering. And the limitation is that when you have, you know, a young family and work commitments, you have other stresses, other inputs that are coming into the system of you. So, you know, an example for me today, I have a 1 and a 2-year-old, and the 2-year-old was up just after 5 crying out for mummy, and that, you know, caused a nice drama and a hoo-ha, and everyone was up and awake. And then the 1-year-old was up just after 6 crying again, okay? And I think both of them a little bit unwell. So what that means to me is that, you know, my sleep randomly is limited because I've got kids, and that's what we do. And then there's extra stresses involved in looking after younger kids, and you throw in work and other life commitments and other duties and other responsibilities. Hey, it's lots of stresses. So things like your sleep, your nutrition, your hydration, your stress management, all these things start to be impeded, and that is affected in our muscle recovery and then our performance. The other side of the coin is that when we're looking at our overall performance, you are subject to your day. So if you are training in the evening and you've just had a day at work and then dealing with the kids and everything in between, and then you go and train, your mind might be elsewhere. So before we start stressing lots about trying to be optimal around our training split and body part splits and all this thing and trying to be perfect, especially if we're trying to build muscle, we need to consider all these other big rocks, like what's your recovery like? What's your intensity like in the gym? What's your nutrition like? So all these factors probably play a bigger outcome than, oh, is it better to do a upper lower or full body split or whatever it is. So if we're being specific about training splits, the upper lower split might be the best in this situation because there is that break in between. Another option could be like a full body split. And what this means, why this is helpful is because you're not applying so much volume on each body part. So let's say your legs, instead of doing 3 or 4 exercises on your legs where you just absolutely knacker your legs, and then 2 days later you're going to train your legs again, that could be a problematic. But if you're just doing maybe 1 exercise or a couple of sets on like one leg exercise, so let's say you're training 3 or 4 days a week, on one particular day you do squats, another particular day you do leg press, the other particular day you do lunges, another particular day you do a leg extension, that's not a massive amount of volume, and it doesn't dip into a big fatigue demand that you could recover kind of overnight and get ready for the next bout of activity. So a full body approach could be helpful, and that could be better because on those days where you need to move your training days around spontaneously, you could do so, and you could skip a full body day and go into the next full body day because your whole body being trained. But if you skip legs day and you find that you keep skipping legs day, then you might face a problem because you just keep skipping this particular day where you're training half of your body, right? So maybe a full body split could be helpful. Another idea that you recommended in our chat was that a body part split might be helpful as well. You know, on a particular day you train chest, and then the next day you train back, and the next day you train arms or whatever. That could be helpful, of course, because, you know, if you are training your chest on Monday and you don't train your chest until 4 workouts later, then there is very limited overlap there. But that goes into a deeper conversation around optimal approaches, because we start talking about per workout volume versus per weekly volume and such, but that's a much bigger conversation. The main takeaway here, please, is that the training split is kind of lower on the priority list of things that we could try to optimize, where it's probably better to focus on getting better quality sleep, managing the stress a little bit better, looking at the ways that we can improve our training intensity and training execution, and then overall approaches to nutrition to support building muscle, which in a nutshell is just having lots of protein and a calorie surplus that we are able to grow some body tissue. That's it, team. Let's wrap it up there for this episode of the Rise Method podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, let me know, and I'll catch you next week for the next one. See you guys.